Yes, it is, okay. Mr. Shanahan, good morning to you.
Mr. Vala.
Okay, Mr. Vala, good morning to you.
May it please the court, my name is Nick Vala. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff appellee Harlan Burghardt, who petitioned for further review in this court. As the court knows, this is a dissolution of marriage case that was tried before Judge Harder, went through the Court of Appeals. We petitioned for further review, which was accepted. There are basically two issues today before the court relating to allegations by Harlan of non-marital property. The first one deals with a 401k and its value at the time of marriage, which was in 1992. The second issue, claims of non-marital property, are as a result of an inheritance from his father passing away on some farm ground in Kansas. Harlan began working for Kinder Morgan, or KN Energy, as it was later determined, in 1978. The testimony at trial by Harlan was that at the time of marriage, he had accumulated $130,000 in that 401k. Harlan was asked in terms, I believe it was on cross, at what point did he begin making contributions, and he said, I would guess about the mid-80s. But he testified very specifically to Judge Harder, who observed the witnesses and judged the credibility, that it sticks out in my mind as plain as day. Harlan testified very specifically as to what he knew was in the 401k at that time.
Was that amount set forth on a property statement in advance of trial?
I believe so. I don't have it in front of me, and I honestly don't recall the specifics of how that played out. I don't remember there being an objection, so I assume so. The Court of Appeals determined or held that there was no documentation in order to demonstrate or corroborate his testimony. No documentation whatsoever to definitively determine the amount of value. So our position is, number one, there isn't a requirement that documentation be submitted in order to support your allegation of a premarital asset or the amount of that asset. Now, in Brozat, which was also cited by the appellate court, indicates that, or specifically states, that oral testimony or testimony alone can support the tracing of those premarital assets and how those come through the marriage in different permutations. It seems to me then that if we can use testimony alone to establish that fact, why could we not use testimony alone in order to establish the initial amount or the initial item, whether it's a tractor, 401k, whatever it may be. Additionally, testimony is just as much evidence as documentary evidence. So in order to claim, I think, that we always have to have documentary evidence is misplaced. I also think, because the appellant argues, well, that's just applied to this case. I don't read the Court of Appeals as saying that, but even if we do, it seems to defy logic that we would apply it to this case when this case, the 1992, was practically 15 years or so prior. I mean, how are we supposed to get that documentation? Now, Court of Appeals did go through some mental gymnastics in order to educate as to what may be available. Quite frankly, I don't know that it would have been available, but in Harlan's case, he had the burden of proof to establish that it was premarital and the amount. He testified to that, which met his prima facie case. That testimony was not rebutted. There was no contrary evidence whatsoever. Judge Harder observed the witnesses, judged the credibility, and determined that Harlan knew what he was talking about and knew the value, and knew the value as of 1992. Shirley simply said, I don't know. She didn't know. What more would be necessary than a credible witness, as determined by the trial court, to establish your burden of proof to demonstrate that something in 1992 existed?
You don't dispute that documentary evidence may have great persuasive value to a trier of fact?
Oh, certainly. In any particular case, a document can be persuasive in any number of ways. So can testimony. It just depends on the facts of the case and the trier of fact. Which also brings us to the $60,000 inheritance. The Court of Appeals determined that he did have documentation, but there wasn't any documentation to definitively demonstrate that there was a $60,000 inheritance that he received through the farm. Now, interestingly, in this point, and again, it comes down to the credibility of witnesses, Shirley, as I recall, testified that she didn't recall, had no idea about an inheritance. And I think she likely lost some credibility with the trial court at that point because they ended up with the family farm after his dad died. It seems to me that she knew something about the inheritance or something was going on to get the family farm in their name. Harlan was very clear, yet again, that that was the value of his 25% share. He wasn't claiming any increase in value. We weren't getting into that. He wasn't claiming anything else. I got $60,000 out of this inheritance, and I just want it followed through. And that was it. Again, the trial judge observed the credibility of the witnesses. There was no rebuttal testimony. There was no rebuttal evidence that he was mistaken. Nothing. She didn't know. It was uncontradicted testimony. Once he met his prima facie case, the burden of proof, if by a credible witness, which the trial judge found that he was, he met that. To add the burden of proof to be definitive, depending upon how we define definitive, could be more than beyond a reasonable doubt. He had the burden of proof. He needed to persuade the trier of fact through his testimony of a fact, the fact that he had.
What level was the burden of proof in this case?
I would imagine preponderance of the evidence. I don't recall off the top of my head any case law indicating that it was a higher standard than a burden of proof, or the preponderance of the evidence.
What do you believe is the legal error by the Court of Appeals?
I think that
if any.
I think that it's twofold. Number one, I don't think that there is a requirement, as indicated in their opinion, that documentary evidence be submitted to corroborate your oral testimony. I think you can, it was an error to not determine or acquiesce in the notion that his burden of proof of non-marital property can be established by testimony alone. Just as this court stated in Brozak, testimony alone can establish the tracing of something that was premarital. The second thing that I think they were in error on is they said in several points, as I recall, definitive. And I don't think that whatever we're talking about in a property distribution case, that any party is required, quite frankly, to show anything that I know of definitively, other than potentially the marriage. So I think that that particular term of art or that terminology used by the Court of Appeals was in error. I think the burden of proof always remained with Harlan, and he had the burden of proof beyond a preponderance of the evidence. Now, that may change with the inheritance, because there is case law indicating that once you establish the inheritance, it's presumed that it's non-marital. But the Court of Appeals did find or state that Harlan did meet his burden of proof to demonstrate that an inheritance was received, but he failed to demonstrate the amount of that because he had no documentary evidence to definitively show the $60,000. Beyond that quirk, I suppose that I think the burden of proof is simply a preponderance of the evidence. So in conclusion, Harlan met his burden of proof. He established his prima facie case in terms of those two issues by his own testimony that was not contradicted. There was no contradictory evidence to demonstrate that his recollection was inaccurate. Now, they do like to point at, well, he guessed that he started contributing in the mid-80s. It could have been the earlier 80s. We don't know how much the company was contributing. I understand all of the notions that the background or the historical information to how we get to 1992 and $130,000 isn't present. But again, that's a credibility assessment that the trial court is charged generally with determining and did determine. Judge Harder clearly found Harlan very credible and honest in his forthright in his testimony to her. So if there's no further questions, in conclusion, we simply ask that you reverse the Court of Appeals as to those two issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Alexander, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, Judge. Please, the Court, Mr. Valli. I think the Court of Appeals is spot on with their decision. I think it's an accurate decision. I think it's a decision that's based upon this Court's decisions prior. Mr. Valli, in his argument to this Court, says this wasn't disputed. Well, it was disputed. The $60,000 inheritance, the $130,000 credit for the 401k was disputed. My client, Shirley Burkhart, who I represent, clearly testified she wasn't aware of any pension amount that Harlan had before, so that is disputed. Number two, she says I wasn't aware of any inheritance he had. That is disputed. And Mr. Valli, in his argument here, I personally think is trying to shift the burden to Harlan. So he's credible. That's it. Okay, that's not what this is about. You've got a 25-year marriage here, all right? And this Court stated before, the longer the duration of the marriage, the larger the burden is to prove premarital assets or assets owned before the marriage. Rightfully so. The reason for that rationale, I'm sure, is because as you get into a marriage deeper and deeper and deeper, the tracing factor, the factor that you have with premarital property, has a tendency to not exist, can be changed, can be moved around, sold, etc., etc. It makes perfectly good sense, Justices, that you have to have a paper trail. You have to prove this circumstance, i.e., you owned it. What was the amount? How much was it? And here it is. That's necessary in the 25-year marriage.
What is your authority for you have to have a paper trail?
Well, this Court, Onstat says that number one, and Brozak says that number two. Those two cases I cited in my brief clearly say there must be something there. And Justice Havikin, the important thing here is that, to me, this is a really slippery slope, because if you follow the line of thinking that Mr. Burkhart has here, that means anybody can get up on the witness stand, testify under oath, credible or not credible, well, I had $200,000 in an account. Okay, show it. I had $1 million. I mean, where's this going to stop? I mean, the whole rationale from this Court in this past history has been, if you're going to claim that, you've got to have some idea or burden of proof to show it. And that just simply doesn't exist here.
Mr. Alexander, I've been waiting patiently for a break.
Sorry.
I'm going to jump in here. Your opponent suggests that his client's burden of proof on this issue was by, he said, the preponderance, I would say the greater weight of the evidence. I think that's the terminology that we use in the modern day, at least in jury instructions. Do you agree that that was the burden of proof on this issue?
I would submit that to the Court, yes. I would have to say that was correct.
I was a little perplexed at your argument about how over the years the burden of proof would change in a marriage. Wouldn't the burden of proof be the same whether it's a one-year marriage, a 10-year marriage, or, in my case, a 41-year marriage?
Sure. Well, if I misspoke, so be it, Judge. But, Justice, but here's my thinking. My thinking is that I think the Court has stated, and I said in my brief, the Court has stated that the longer the marriage, this Court stated, the longer the marriage, the higher degree of proof that you would need to be able to say this was a premarital asset. That comes from this Court in the case I cited in my, it doesn't come to you right now, but I cited in my brief. That's where I'm going with that.
Oh, thank you.
So, you got a $130,000 credit here and a $60,000 credit for inheritance. That's a lot of money. And certainly when you look at the 25-year marriage and you look at the issue of how much of a credit that is, to me it makes absolutely no sense when you don't have any kind of paper trail that would show that these in fact actually exist. I understand Mr. Valli with Mr. Burkhart, well, they couldn't get those documents. Well, that doesn't change the fact that it's their burden. And I look at this and I look at the Court of Appeals decision, which I think was correct, and their analogy, or not analogy, their analysis of this, okay, so on the inheritance, yeah, there was a transfer of deed, okay, it came from Harlan's sister and himself to Shirley. But where's the check? Where's the check? I mean, it was $157,500 is what the price of the farm was. That's what this was about, and that's where the credit came in, okay? Well, gee whiz, that's not 1995. I mean, where's that check that would show, okay, I got a $60,000 credit, I take away that from $157,500, so I got a check. Show me the check from somewhere. No check exists. I mean, they could have easily gotten that information. And what I hear Mr. Volley saying on behalf of Mr. Burkhardt is, well, we just couldn't do it. We're sorry. He's good enough. Harlan's testimony is good enough. But that's not what the case law says, and that's not what this court said time and time again. And I would agree with that simply because, Justices, if you open that door, in my humble opinion, Katie barred the door, because then you're not going to have any kind of proof necessary to show these premarital assets, to show this inheritance. So I think the court, the analysis by the appellate court was absolutely point on. I think they set out very good rationale and gave you all the information as to why they did that, and I think it's perfect. So that's my take on it. And I'm done. Yeah, sorry, I talked too much, Judge. Or Justice, excuse me. My apologies. Any questions, Justices? No?
Thank you very
yes,
much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Do we have time for rebuttal?
6 seconds.
6 seconds, Mr. Valla. Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Dady.